Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
And the overlap, from what I gather, is really around three things. First, we have to get clear. So questions to help get clear and understand, you know, who we are now, who we want to become, or if it's business, you know, how did we get to this point? Where are we heading? So we understand and we're super clear on what's going on. And then the next phase is to ask questions around intentionality. So asking questions to understand, well, are the actions I'm taking supporting that person I want to become or supporting the business that I'm trying to create? My habits support that. The systems surrounding those habits support who I am, right? And that's all you have to remember, because the third part comes by default if you're doing the first two steps. And the third one is just there's an expansion of possibility or there's an expansion of opportunity because you can see it. You know, it's all there. It's just we normally can't see it because our mind is fogged with emotion, decisions, relationships that don't serve us. But as soon as we start getting clear on the person that we want to become and we start blowing out all that mental fog, now all of a sudden you can see the opportunity.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Mark, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you. I can't wait, man.
I am so thrilled to have you here. I found out about you and your work by way of the team at Baron Fig. And as a person who is obsessed with notebooks and journals, it was kind of an instant yes. And I didn't even realize what I was getting myself into. And I know, you know, we're talking for a second time because we had to reschedule, but I just finished reading your book this morning, Personal Socrates. And I thought, wow, this is a really, really cool book. And there's a lot of really interesting ideas in here. But before we get into that, speaking of questions, I thought we'd start by asking you, what is one of the most important things that you learned from one or both of your parents that have influenced where you've ended up with your life, what you ended up doing?
Yeah, I mean, the characteristic that comes to mind all the time is just to live life with a kind mindset. I grew up with a really loving set of parents that, you know, I remember when my dad passed, the amount of people that were at that funeral and that, you know, the comments that were left behind was just like, he was just such a loving and caring guy. And no matter what, you know, he was a happy individual, and left people, you know, excited and energized when he was in the room. And that's honestly my main goal in life, because you know how it is, when, especially in the podcasting world, like for me, there's nothing that energizes me more than connecting with awesome humans on the other side of the mic, you being one of those. And there's nothing worse than leaving a conversation like that feeling drained, right? So my objective is always to leave that person on the other side more energized than when they came into the conversation and just feeling good.
Yeah. How old were you when your dad passed? Was this when you're younger, or did this happen as an adult?
It would have been as an adult. I think it's been about 5 years now.
The reason I asked is because one of the things I learned from talking to Frank Ostasevsky at the Zen Hospice Project
was that we tend to undervalue the time that we have left with the people who matter most. And I remember telling him, I said, you know, like for this long time, I had this really persistent fear that I might end up alone. And as I started getting older, I thought, you know, actually, I'm not afraid of being alone. What I'm more scared of is that my parents wouldn't be here to see milestone moments in my life. And he said, well, don't wait for those big moments, you know, spend time with them now. But the other thing that I wonder is, you know, I've heard people tell me that losing a parent is something you never get over it. You move on. But I wonder, like, you know, how you process such a painful experience, you know, because to me, it's one of those things that I don't think anybody can ever understand it, no matter how many books you read, no matter how many podcasts you listen to, until you've experienced it yourself.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's challenging. And I think what's the most challenging for me, especially where I'm at in my life right now, he passed away about 3 months before my son was born. And, you know, that's the challenging piece is that, you know, obviously I know my dad and my wife's, you know, been around for a decade plus before he passed as well. And, you know, just that feeling of that my little guy won't be able to experience his grandfather or at this, you know, same way that I did. And then the other thing too, is just like everything going on in my world. He passed away right when I basically left the corporate arena and jumped into the whole entrepreneurial space. And, you know, he didn't get to see some of the outcomes that took place and some of the life explosions that took place on my journey with the app and whatnot. And then now with the book, like there'd be nothing that would make me smile more than to hand him a physical copy of this book. Right. So, you know, for me, I think it's just knowing for anyone that passes, knowing they're there. And I often think of something I learned from Maya Angelou actually in the book actually, and just, you know, keeping those people really close to you. And when you need them, for example, if you're about to deliver a presentation or about to work on a big, you know, project where there's fear or anxiety or uncertainty, to like, you know, close your eyes and bring those people that you know love you and support you, and they're there with you. May not be there physically, but they're there, you know, in spirit, and you know that they've got your back. So I bring my dad to light in many situations from that perspective.
Yeah. It's funny. I had Alex Benayan here. You may know him. He wrote a book called The Third Door. And I remember it was right when the book came out. And in that same year, his dad had passed away. And I remember him telling me, he said, you know, people think that I am, you know, dealing with a book launch while, you know, navigating the loss of my father. And he said, the reality is I'm dealing with the loss of my father while navigating a book launch. And you know, he said, you know, you may be the only person who brought me to tears during an interview. And I said, not intentionally, but I remember thinking at that time that, wow, you know, for a moment I was envious because my books didn't do as well. And I said, you know what? I wouldn't trade a single book sale if it meant I'd get less time with my dad.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
So what actually ended up, you know, putting you on this trajectory that you're on to end up, you know, where you're at and to write this book in particular of all the books that you could write? Like, how did you end up here?
Yeah, it's a good question. Because, I mean, I wouldn't have, if you think back to my parents and, you know, when I was living at home and whatnot and where I grew up, like, I never imagined that I would write a book. It kind of happened, you know, and what facilitated that was after I spent about a decade in the healthcare space in the corporate environment in various roles, sales, analytics, and at the very end or the majority of my career, I was in product management. And I share that just because during those years, the consistent that actually led to a lot of the work that I'm doing now was that I was getting up earlier in the morning and I was reading positive things, positive content, trying everything possible to fuel my mind with good mental nutrition. And that started because when I came out of university, my first job was in sales. And I remember thinking, everyone's being trained up in the same way. So how possibly am I going to stand out in this group if we're all going through the same training? And for whatever reason, I started reading and started getting up earlier. And it didn't take long to realize that the Robin Sharmas of the world, or like Tony Robbins, or at that time, I remember I was reading Success Magazine, and you've got Jack Canfield and John Azareth, like all these interesting humans that were being profiled. They were all taking time to think and taking time to answer good reflective questions. So I just started doing that. I started writing down the questions that I would see in this content, and I started answering them from the perspective of where I was at in my life personally and professionally. And I did that for, like I said, about eight to 10 years until eventually getting frustrated, or I got frustrated with the digital options that were available at that time. Because at that time, this would have been about 3-4 years ago now, the meditation apps, Calm, Headspace, and Insight Timer and whatnot, they were all really starting to take off from a mainstream perspective. But there was nothing out there that was helping people get into a practice like journaling. Essentially, that's what I was doing, right? I was just taking content and reflecting. That's all journaling is reflection. That's the practice. And I was doing it digitally because I was traveling quite a bit with those various roles. And like I said, there was just nothing that existed that would be a nice seamless experience of taking prompts, which is what I was getting from that content, and then reflecting on them. So essentially, I set out to create that and flip my brother-in-law an email, and who was also the co-founder of the app that we created, Keo. And we started bringing in, you know, some of the names that you're mentioning. They were in that app, like, you know, Cal Fussman and so forth. That was, I think we were talking about him before we hit record, but there was all of these different people that were providing the reflective questions that were important in their lives at some point, or that they were thinking about on a frequent basis, including brands like VaynerMedia and Lego and LinkedIn and so forth. And, you know, we launched the app, and it did well in the sense that we reached about 86.9 million people in the first couple of years from an app store impression standpoint. And, you know, we had a decent amount of users in the app. And that's really what, I'll pause here because I said a lot, but that's really what got me directly involved in what I call the mental fitness space.
Yeah. Well, I think there are a couple of questions that, you know, surfaced for me about this. You actually went and did something with this material, whereas I think that there's, you know, a large subset of people. In fact, I jokingly say the personal development industry is basically built on people who consume a lot of content but don't do anything with it. I always say it's like there's these three groups of people. It's like the people who would get a result if they did the thing or not, because that's how they're wired. The second group who, you know, consuming this thing becomes a catalyst for them, like you. And then there's a third group who just keeps going back to, you know, the same thing over and over. And Stephen Kotler and I were talking about this. It's like these people become seminar junkies. You know, based on your perspective, why does that happen? And then, you know, the thing that struck me most that you said about the app was, you know, I was not just deleting an app from the store, I was deleting my identity from the last 3 years. The motivation surrounding a new idea and any hopes of helping millions of people with one action from my finger on my touchpad. At least that is what I was hearing from internal narrative. Let's start with the first question first, but then we'll follow up with this because I think there's a lot on that second one too.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now, with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Between reading the books of all the people I interview, writing articles, and managing my business, I have to deal with and process a lot of information. And one of the biggest causes of information overload and digital distractions in our modern lives is the way that we organize information. Using 20 different apps and sifting through folders is a bit like going to a different grocery store to buy every item on your list, but it doesn't have to be this way. If you've ever felt like you're completely buried by information overload or you can't remember everything that's important, then maximize your output with Mem. Our new knowledge management course is just for you. Mem is the knowledge management app that helps you get a handle on everything from reducing information overload to remembering what matters and managing your tasks and projects more efficiently. In this course, you'll learn how to reduce information overload and focus on what's important, remember everything that matters with ease, and manage everything in one place and get more done in less time. I loved Mem so much that I ended up creating this course. And it's a perfect course for knowledge workers and creatives who want to take back control of their time and productivity. You can learn more about it at maximizeyouroutput.com. Again, that's maximizeyouroutput.com.
Yeah. I think with the space in general, I mean, realistically, a lot of that work falls on people's laps or in front of their eyes at, you know, let's just be honest, like some of the hardest times that those people are facing. And, you know, like any human, I think we seek certainty in some capacity, right? So when you bring in this content, and especially a lot of the marketing that's linked up with much of the industry, which unfortunately, you know, I don't agree with a lot of it because I think it's almost plain taking victim of people for what I just mentioned, right? And people are in tough places and you're hooking them in, right, with these click funnels and things like that. And you know, there's this sense that, okay, if I just read this next book or just take this next course, that the answer or the path will appear. And there's some truth to that in the sense that I think that some clarity can be found if you're going through the motions, but going through that process, I should say. But most of the time, it's just that you're going through the motions and you're actually not stopping and pausing and applying the actual content, right? I think that's the big thing. And that's why I'm so obsessed with questions, because naturally questions allow us to pause, think, and then take some sort of action or shift our perspective, right? And that's what excites me about this space is it's like, I'm not inventing journaling and I'm not inventing questions, but what I'm trying to do is meet people where they're at in their lives right now with a powerful question to help that facilitate that pause. And then hopefully through the story of either who, you know, I'm profiling, whether that's a Picasso or Steven Kotler, for example, that there's enough relatability there with either the work or personal life that you get the person's attention, But then through the questions, you actually apply that, and that's where the change can happen, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk about, you know, what you said about deleting this app, because I think that, you know, particularly for creative people, their work and their identity gets so intertwined. You know, it took me a long time to get past that. Ironically, despite writing a book about creativity for its own sake, I remember to this day, my sister calls me and she's like, "You don't even believe what you wrote in your own book. No wonder nobody's buying it." And, you know, it was ironic because the entire message of the book was not to worry about metrics, and I was freaking out about book sales. But that's easier said than done. I remember Ryan Holiday once told me on this show, he said, you know, if your happiness depends on, you know, sort of external factors like how many books you sell, et cetera, it's a recipe for profound disappointment. And I remember putting that quote on Facebook and Ryan replied saying, easier said than done.
Yeah. Well, totally. Like, I mean, I'm in that right now as well with my book. And it's easy to get sucked into jumping on Amazon rankings and bestseller lists and stuff like that. And especially, you know, I'm super grateful for this, but the book debuted on a couple bestseller lists at number two, which I was pumped, but I learned enough from the app experience. Because what listeners don't know, I mean, the quote you shared is from the introduction of the book, but what happened with reaching all of those people, that didn't mean with the app, that didn't mean that our business was sound. And unfortunately, we ran out of money. We ran out of mental capacity to keep that business going. So I had to hit delete from App Store, right? So the learning or the insight coming from that experience is kind of porting itself over to this book experience, that the lesson being, don't fall for your own hype. You know, we for all intents and purposes, and I would have thought the same thing, that team, those people must be killing it. How do you reach 87.9 or 86.9 million people and not have a booming business? Or we had all these, you know, these magazine articles and collaborations with, like I said, like the VaynerMedias of the world and LinkedIn and big brands, right? Which is good from a marketing standpoint, but that, again, I really think you can't connect that or be jaded by that hype if your business isn't actually working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's funny because I've been going back through Reid Hoffman's book, Blitz Scaling, and he talks about that. He said, you know, like, if you don't have a business model behind technology, you know, that goes with it, he said, then you're kind of screwed. And I went to Berkeley during the first .com boom. And, you know, I was jokingly saying with a friend, I was like, you've never seen so many smart people do so many stupid things. It was just like, yeah, you know, you could put .com on, you know, the end of anything. And I remember going to this party that was filled with some of the most prominent venture capitalists in Silicon Valley. It was in San Francisco at an art gallery. And this company was announcing that they were now charging for a service that had been free. I'm like, let me get this straight. So you're charging for a service that was previously free, and the way to do that is by throwing a party that cost a shitload of money. Any CFO would have been like, what the fuck? But, you know, people lost their minds during that time.
Yeah, of course. Well, and it's just, I don't know. I mean, you know, I went through that experience. It was insightful. It's the only reason I'm speaking with you and able to have these type of conversations, which, like I said, at the top of the top of our conversation lights me up, right? It energizes me, for example. But, you know, I don't want to repeat those habits or those mistakes. And so I've, with this book launch, I've gone into this really trying to practice or follow what I'm preaching with the practices and go in very clear. I mean, I know I've given it, and the publisher and the team has given the book a solid push to reach as many people as possible, because I really believe in the work, and I really do believe that we're all one question away from a completely different path or life. So that, you know, that's the purpose behind this. But at the same time, I mean, I already got the value out of the experience. I mean, the experience was that I've never written a book before, and now I have a published book, and, you know, I learned a lot in the last year and a half putting this thing together, and I can't wait to do more of these projects. So, you know, it sounds cliche. You hear this all the time, but that the value is in the journey. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we all have to hear that, or it's because it's not the first time I've heard that, but it didn't land until I really started working on this book. And I think we're all at different places in our lives that eventually that, I hope at least, eventually that principle or that thought will land with someone. And then life just lightens when that happens. Mm.
Well, it's funny because I think I had the same exact experience. And mine was a bit twisted because I had a self-published book that became a Wall Street Journal bestseller very, unexpectedly. And then I get a book deal. So imagine going in with that as your baseline. You feel kind of like Elizabeth Gilbert did. And I know for a fact that my books that I wrote with the publisher are far more well-written and they're much better books and they didn't sell nearly as well. And it took me a long time to make my peace with that. But to your point, what I realized was that, as you say, it's in the journey. And they always say, people always say it's not, what you get, but who you become. And of course, nobody expands beyond that. And what I realized was the person you become as a byproduct of writing a book is a person who can take a vague idea and make it happen, which is a skill that you can apply to damn near anything. And I realized that's going to be invaluable for the rest of my life.
Yeah, totally. I mean, well, that's what I'm experiencing now. And like the reason I want to, I'm focusing on going through this process as clear as possible is because I can feel that there are different opportunities that are popping up from all different avenues that, I don't want to fall for the bright and shiny object. I want to go in the direction that I know will help support my ultimate goals of building, a nice ecosystem to help people with their mental fitness. And book is one, but my show is another. And there's a lot of corporate work that I'm doing as well, helping teams ask better questions essentially and bring in these practices. So, that it all of these things fuel each other. And we saw that with the app. That's why we reached so many people. I mean, we were collaborating and bringing in all of these different angles and different pieces of content and different companies and people, and all making sure that everything was fueling, in this case, that whole ecosystem, right? So it's the same thing essentially that I'm trying to do. It's just I'm coming in, I think you mentioned this, but I'm basically coming in as a different person. I am a completely different human, and so is my wife, frankly, going through this whole, entrepreneurial world of the app. We're just different people from who we were 5 years ago. And it feels nice to have evolved to this place and know that, just like what you just said with your first book, and for me, it resonates with our app, it's possible to reach 86.9 million people. I mean, we did it. And never would I have predicted that, but it's possible. And there's so many other things that are possible as long as we can see them, right? And we're on the path that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
So before we start getting sort of into the framework of the book, I wanted to ask you one last question. You're a parent, and it's funny because I have this misguided idea that, if I ask every parent I interview for parenting advice, someday I'll be a decent parent, which it turns out, everybody says, yeah, that's not going to work, because my favorite quote I've ever heard about parenting on this show is from Sarah Peck. She's like, parenting is just a giant shit show. Basically, you screw this kid up and explain to him that we're going to fuck up, and then your job is to spend tons of money on therapy to fix everything we screwed up. But I wonder, all joking aside, like your own experience as an entrepreneur, writing this book, what impact has that had on you as a parent?
Oh, I mean, it was huge. I mean, sticking with the humor at first, I mean, I always joke that my ultimate goal is just to keep these mini humans alive, right? And then from there, I mean, it's all bonus essentially.
So, make sure they don't turn out to be giant assholes. Like no matter how much you fault your parents, you're like, it's a tall order to like take this like mini me and make sure they don't, one, they don't die, and then make sure they don't turn out to be horrible humans.
Exactly. So just like any project, you got to break it down into micro steps. first, keep them alive. So I think I'm so far past that. I mean, anything can happen, obviously, but I mean, we went through that stage. And then now, honestly, I go right back to kind of what I learned from my parents, and I'm just, doing everything possible as a dad to A, keep his curiosity at the level it's at. He's 5 years old. That's the age where you get nailed with questions nonstop. Being a guy that works with questions, basically there's going to become a natural point in his life, probably more the more he goes through school, where those questions will start to diminish. And what normally happens, and we all go through this, but then all of a sudden you hit a point in your life where something explodes or something happens and you start asking questions again. So, I mean, my ultimate goal is to try to narrow that gap and keep his curiosity, you know, peaked and alive. Because when we're asking good questions, I learned this one from Chip Conley. I mean, the most curious person in the room is also the most present. And when you're present, people feel that, and you're also present for yourself. And again, you can see a clearer path for either your life or your work. So, yeah. So for me, it's, you know, that's what I'm trying to do. But at the same time, I mean, he had a huge influence in the decision to shut down that app, because I remember he would have been about 2 or 3 years old. I remember coming home, doing everything possible to shield the stress, you know, of knowing that we were way in over our heads with, from a financial perspective, that I'm deleting this business that was supposed to be the vehicle that was going to keep me in the space that I now know is absolutely the space I want to work in. I mean, you know, they pick up on these, on these things. And that was my greatest fear, was, am I doing damage, right? Like, we were joking about this in your the example you gave about therapy and stuff like that. Like, am I doing damage to this child? Because I'm just trying to make this damn business work. So that was, you know, that was weighing heavily on me. And at the end of the day, it felt like it wasn't worth that risk and that stress, not to mention, you know, I wasn't feeling great. And I also knew in my core that this was just one element of that journey, that I would continue down this avenue of, you know, helping people with these prompts and teaching and working in the space of mental fitness. Just so happens that vehicle was the app. But there's so many different ways to do it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So before we get into the Socratic method and the idea, I wanted to ask you about one other thing. You know, I've spent a lot of time diving into the bullet journal, which I'm sure you're familiar with. And probably never gifted a book as much as I've gifted the bullet journal method. But your book seems like a nice compliment. It's like these two books should be, you know, given together as gifts going forward. So I will be doing that going forward. Because I've literally given the bullet journal to more people than I can, you know, to think of, and I've read 1,000 books, so that says a lot. But let's talk briefly about handwriting in particular, because I think that there is this sort of, you know, obsessive, compulsive desire. It's like, hey, let's get on the latest, greatest app. You know, there's something new that everybody says everybody needs to be on. And I realized that analog, in a world of, you know, that has gone, you know, extremely digital, is incredibly beneficial, but I don't think people really understand that. And my handwriting is atrocious. And I still find it valuable. But, you know, you worked at Baron Fig, so, you know, you probably have a much more, you know, like, clear view into why the benefits of this.
Well, there's definitely science behind, I can't remember the exact stats, but I mean, you're definitely at a higher probability or percentage to retain the information when you physically write it out. I think there's some stats around productivity as well as creativity from pen to paper. But I, you know, the thing is with this topic, and remember, I mean, I kind of like what you just described, I could never read my handwriting in the past, and it's not the greatest now either. That's why I started on a digital front. And before launching the app, I was essentially typing this stuff in word processors and whatnot. Now, though, the realization has, and this has lifted a whole array of opportunity with the practice. Because if you think of journaling from the perspective of pen to paper, which it's most often discussed, you're limited to one method. When the actual practice itself is actually reflection. And that's, you know, and that's what I learned, you know, a decade ago when I was studying all these remarkable humans, but them taking time to think, that's the reflection. So, you know, I think what's most important, forget the science and the stats, is that you actually do something to help foster thought and to have that reflection. So for you, or for people listening, maybe that's just, you know, taking a walk with a prompt and thinking about it. Maybe that's pen to paper, maybe that's using an app or recording an audiobook or calling a friend. Whatever it is, I mean, it doesn't necessarily matter what the vehicle is. It's the actual practice of reflection. And now where I'm at with it is that I mean, I'm a bit spoiled with Baron Fig and their notebooks and their product and the fact that the book is published by them, so that you've got that Baron Fig quality and charm to the book. But I still use apps as well. And I use the app, or I use a notebook, or I take a walk based on what I need in that moment. And if once you can disconnect the associations you have with, oh, maybe I want to have my bookshelf lined with 15 journals over the years so I can go back to it, there's some value to that for sure, but not as much value as in the moment, the in the moment benefits of the actual practice.
Well, let's talk specifically about the Socratic method, you know, which you break down into, you know, you say that scholars of Socrates have noted six types of questions forming the basis of the Socratic method. Can you explain what those questions are and you know, how we can apply them to our lives?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, it's Srini. I want to tell you about something new that we've been building for you. The Unmistakable Collective is a monthly membership for writers, bloggers, podcasters, and content creators who want to build an audience for their work. As a member of the collective, you get access to exclusive content that we don't publish anywhere else, 3 monthly events, including office hours, Q&A sessions with former podcast guests, and regular workshops to help you develop the foundational skills you need for building an audience. And it only costs $30 a month. If you want to build an audience for your blog, write a book, or start a podcast of your own, go to unmistakablecreative.com/collective to learn more. Again, that's unmistakablecreative.com/collective.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I should say I can, because, and that's the whole premise of why the book is structured the way it is, because I remember having the discussion about the book concept and what I was writing about, and essentially what I've been learning from all of these people and my own practice, and everything kept coming back to the idea of asking a big question and then a follow-up question, and keep asking questions until essentially you get past the surface to the root cause or root objective of whatever you're working on, for example. And I was actually in conversation with the CEO of Baron Fig about this, and who has a minor in philosophy, I think. And he said, oh, so you're just talking about the Socratic method. I said, well, the Socratic what? Like, I know who Socrates is, and I know high level, you know, he's the guy that asks a lot of questions type thing, but that's kind of as far as it went. So when I started to dig into it, and at the same time, I should mention, he said, you know, the book should be really called Personal Socrates. And I said, absolutely not. I can't stand that. I'm not writing a book on philosophy. I don't consider myself a philosopher. And that sounds like a terrible idea. So I started doing the research though, and quickly started to come to this realization of, wow, you know, here's this guy, Socrates, born, you know, 469 BC. He's been around since the beginning of time. He invented this method that is essentially designed to bring more clarity and, you know, challenge assumptions and all of these different things, which are some of the question types. And we're all doing this in some capacity, but we don't even know we're doing it. And we're definitely not doing it with an intention. So that's when my curiosity was piqued, because I could see the flow from all the interviews that I had done as well, that people were following this method. But how do we modernize it so that, you know, the fact that I can't even remember those six question types, they're in the book, obviously they're listed out. And like I said, they're clarity seeking type questions, they're challenging assumptions, there's questioning the question, but you don't remember that intuitively in day-to-day life. Like, oh, I need a clarity seeking question followed up by a question by the question, and then a challenge in the assumptions. Like, it just, we don't process our environment like that. So that's when I started to think about, okay, well, what do I see that's similar with the Socratic method or these question types, and how I see all of these top performing humans, present day and past, like the Picassos of the world and Jane Austen and so forth, Maya Angelou, where's the overlap? And the overlap, from what I gather, is really around three things. First, we have to get clear. So questions to help get clear and understand, you know, who we are now, who we want to become, or if it's business, you know, how did we get to this point? Where are we heading? So we understand and we're super clear on what's going on. And then the next phase is to ask questions around intentionality. So who comes to mind? Someone like a James Clear, you know, habit expert and the author of Atomic Habits, but asking questions to understand, well, are the actions I'm taking supporting that person I want to become, or supporting the business that I'm trying to create? My habits support that. The systems surrounding those habits support who I am, right? And that's all you have to remember, because the third part comes by default if you're doing the first two steps. And the third one is just, there's an expansion of possibility, or there's an expansion of opportunity, because you can see it. You know, it's all there. It's just we normally can't see it because our mind is fogged with emotion, decisions, relationships that don't serve us. But as soon as we start getting clear on the person that we want to become, and we start blowing out all that mental fog, or if you want to take an example of a physical room, for example, you go in, open the door, and you tidy the place up so you can see that, oh yeah, there's a window back there, the bookshelf's in the back corner, I know I can go there to get that information, because you can see it. Now all of a sudden you can see the opportunity.
Yeah. It's funny, because I can't help but smile when I hear this. You brought up clarity as the very first thing, and I'm writing a blog post about why people don't accomplish their goals. And lack of clarity, of course, is the big one, because we did a reader survey and the answers that people gave about their goals, some of them were so vague, you know, not to pick on people, but I guess I kind of am, because I want them to actually accomplish something. When I saw a meaningful business that needs creativity, my joke with my team has been, great, Pablo Escobar's business was meaningful. It was really creative and it was meaningful to people who are addicted to cocaine. You know, and exactly. That was such a vague goal that I was just like, there's no way you could have Oprah as your life coach and you wouldn't make progress with a goal like this.
Yeah, it's, I mean, what comes to mind as you're saying that, I remember it was an interview with John Azarath, who's created, I think, 5+ multimillion dollar businesses at this point. And it was, I think it was post interview, we were just talking about the book and some of the corporate workshops and trainings that I was spinning up. And again, this is why I love questions. You just knocked me right on the back of my chair and basically my head tilted up and I started to think. And he said, well, how will you know when you've hit your objective? And I'm like, shit, that's a really, you know, I have goals, obviously. But are they super clear in the sense that be like, oh, that it's that number of, if it's number of books or is it number of engagements with clients? Is it number of conversations on podcasts? Like what, how will you know you've arrived and hit that objective where you'd get to the point where you reassess and either, you know, create a new one or adjust or whatever, right? Simple question. But we, many, I mean, and I fall victim to it as well, obviously. You get caught up on the autopilot of life and work, right? So that's again, that's why for me, and it's why the book is written in this fashion. It's like, how can we help just pause that autopilot so that the prompt is there or the story is there that shakes people up a little bit to think, okay, yeah, I didn't really think about that from that perspective, just like how, you know, John Azareth did that for me.
Yeah. So you brought up this idea of, you know, knowing that you hit a particular objective, which, you know, naturally segues for me to wondering, you know, how much is enough? Because, you can just keep hitting this objective and you keep raising the bar. And, you know, we have Daniel Lieberman here who wrote a book called The Molecule of More, which is all about dopamine. And, you know, he said dopamine is all about what you don't have. And he said, no matter how much you get, it'll never be enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what comes to mind is that, this is a profile that I've actually reread in my own book. It's from Jerry Colonna, who's known as the star. You're familiar with, I'm sure, everyone in this book.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I was trying to, probably about 15 of them have been guests on Unmistakable Creative.
Yeah, I love it. So, I mean, for anyone that's listening, he's known as the CEO whisperer, essentially. But before that, he was, really influential investor for Flatiron Ventures back in the .com era. And the profile that I wrote on Jerry and that was inspired by Jerry, obviously, was around the idea that everything is impermanent, right? Including the emotions and the thoughts and the feelings that we're going through right now that are making us feel not the greatest, but also including the moments like the highs of seeing that number two bestseller rank on Amazon with the book. Like, be in those moments, good or bad, but know that they will fizzle out, they will transition, and there's a comfort there with that, knowing that we're never stuck in these extended moments like that. Some are longer than others, don't get me wrong, but just knowing or having that confidence that life just continues to flow and evolve, and everything will shift, right? At one point, I mean, we're all going to die at one point as well. I mean, there's an impermanence into everything. And I think that the one that comes to mind the most that gives at least a nice perspective shift for me is just thinking about our natural seasons throughout nature, right? Like you don't have a summer without the spring or the fall or the winter. I mean, they all work together. And some people love winter depending on what they're doing, and others love summer, and some love both. Everyone's different. But the point being is that we're going to flow through all these seasons, just like we're going to flow through our life of seasons. There's not one that's any better than the other. It all stacks together to create the person we are.
Yeah. So, one thing I wonder is how people start to actually find some semblance of clarity through these questions. And then the other one is, why is it that this sort of Socratic method of thinking is not more prevalent in our education system? Because I think that as I've been going through a lot of the notes that I've taken on books and going through Sanka Aaron's book, How to Take Smart Notes, which really honestly transforms everything you think about reading and writing, I started to realize, I'm like, we're actually not trained to think. We're trained to regurgitate. And this seems to propose the opposite.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, like, I don't know where we've lost the train of thought, because I mean, the method, like I mentioned, originated from Socrates in an academic setting. And, you know, it's still there depending on which profession you're in, or if you're going to school for certain professions, like obviously philosophy, but the other one is that's well known would be if you're going through as a lawyer. A lot of it's based on the Socratic method. But I think, you know, when it comes to everyone else, for example, and I put myself in that bucket, we're doing it. It's just, we're not thinking about those questions. Like, we're all asking the questions like, what do I want to do? Like, where do I want to live? Who do I want to be with? I mean, those are natural, normal questions of life and also work. But they're just the starting point. We often don't take that time because we are trained for the most part to be productive. And up until right now, productivity equates to how much stuff can I do and boxes can I check and books can I read in a day or in a month or in a year. And it's starting to shift, thankfully, but I would say the vast majority of society are still on that train, for example. So when you're doing that, you know, taking time, like taking a 15-minute walk in silence without a podcast or an audiobook to just be present feels unproductive. But it's, you know, incredibly productive in the sense that you're training your curiosity and those muscles for you to be present and notice the detail, which then also shows up when you're reviewing, I don't know, the brand strategy or the marketing strategy when you're like, that's off, when normally you would have just kind of glazed past that. So, you know, I'm comforted and quite excited that things are starting to transition, or at least I'm seeing it in that avenue. And that's a lot of what I'm teaching as well, because everyone that's profiled in this book, or for the most part, my podcast as well, the whole intent for Behind the Human, my show, is to show that these practices, I'm not interviewing yoga instructors and meditation coaches. I mean, those people have these practices. I'm interviewing people like Claude Silver from VaynerMedia, which is a agency known to be grinding it out and hustling. Well, she's calming the agency down. And there's actually a lot of practices in that company so that people can think at their best, which, like you've mentioned Ryan Holiday a few times, which requires stillness, right? The ideas come up when our minds are still. Mm-hmm. That's when we do our best thought.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's funny because it sounds to me like if we could sum that all up, it'd be like, you know, we need to start valuing being reflective as much as we value being productive.
Yeah. And well, the thing is, but if you start studying, I mean, one of the profiles is on Marcus Aurelius. I mean, you know, you can't go much farther back in time. I mean, and if you look at, you know, what was on his plate, fighting, you know, these gruesome wars and literally losing, I think, 13 or 14 of his children over the course of his lifetime, dealing with this massive plague that wiped out 5 million or so people. I mean, the stresses were very real there, but he was also taking time to reflect and process and get clear so that he could make good decisions, right? Yeah. So the stuff isn't new. It's just a matter of how can we make this relatable to our lives today in the current ecosystem of our world and slowly get started.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because I've noticed, you know, when I write about my interviews, I tend to get a lot more out of them. You know, I've been recently turning interviews into articles, and I'm noticing that I seem to really understand it and get a much more in-depth understanding of what I've learned. But, you know, the ongoing joke I make with my friends is that if I could take all of the advice that I got from my podcast guests and actually apply it to my life, I'd be a billionaire with six-pack abs and a harem of supermodels. But none of those things are true.
Absolutely.
You know, so I guess, you know, that kind of raises the question of, you know, how much of, how do you balance that sort of value of learning from external sources, but then also, you know, trusting your own sort of internal wisdom? Because I think that one thing that I see over and over is that we become excessively dependent on external sources of knowledge and wisdom to tell us what to do with our lives. And the result of that is information overload and, you know, stupid decisions in which you don't take context into consideration. You know, I always say, like, the blatantly obvious variable that throws off any formula for success is you.
Yeah, totally. Well, so, and this goes right back to, I think, one of the opening questions that you asked, and that related back to I think you had mentioned your conversation with Stephen Kotler about just being in this endless cycle of seeking knowledge and the next book or the next piece of information. I mean, for me, this doesn't necessarily happen because and this has been a journey, but because I'm constantly reminding myself from these people, from the podcast, that I'm being reminded of the actual practices, which usually link to, okay, they're giving knowledge and they're giving reminders of what works. And then when I'm doing those things, especially when it comes to questions and taking time to think, I'm actually coming up with the solutions to move forward, right? And for me, all of these practices, whether it's breath work, meditation, journaling, you know, calm walks, I mean, there's a couple things happening. They're all training our self-awareness to level that up so we can see more and feel and experience. And then they're also allowing us to be way more present. And when you have that, you know, that recipe flowing or playing out, then all of a sudden, you know, when I'm done for the day and I'm going to go, you know, jam on some Legos with my 5-year-old, I'm actually present with him and there. And that's the gift. Just like writing the book, like back to this journey, because then you can realize that as you're going through the journey, like this is the gift. So you're not trying to seek the next thing or going through all these feelings like I'm not enough. Not that that's not going to come up, but you have the reminders and the tools to, oh, I just caught myself. Yeah, I'm about to log on or jump onto an Amazon list. Is that really going to serve any good right now? Probably not. So refocus back to what you're doing. But often we don't catch that because we don't have a consistent mental fitness practice. And for me, that's been journaling for over the last, you know, 12 years. And for others, it's whatever works for you to prioritize that kind of training, because then it becomes intuitive. And that's the autopilot. You know, that's the only version of autopilot that I want to be on, is that I can recognize when my mind flips into another narrative or, you know, thoughts or feelings of anxiety or uncertainty pop up. Like, I can recognize it and course correct or rechannel or process, so that's not stacking into my mind and then clogging it up, because then I can't see. I can't see for everything else, you know, that's important.
Yeah, I appreciate that so much, because I think that, you know, what I realized over and over this past year is, no matter what advice I get from people, no matter how many books I've read, all advice is contextual. And no matter what anybody says, you have to think about it in the context of your own life. And I've said that great advice in one context is bullshit in another.
Yeah. Well, and this is like, I often get asked, you know, okay, well, what's your favorite question, or what's your favorite profile in the book? And the answer to that is that it depends on what's going on. I mean, right, we've already talked about Jerry Colonna, but I mean, his profile has been really significant over the last month or so, because it lands with stuff that's going on in my life that it serves as a good reminder. If I think of the question that pulled me out of a depression that was leading to a severe depression during the moments of deleting that the journaling app, I mean, the question that pulled me out of that was, what do I want for my life? And that was enough to pause the narrative that was looping to then think, okay, well, if that's what I want for my life, what does the ideal day look like? Who do I need to surround myself out with to get there? What's one step I need to take? You know, just question after question. But if you ask me that question right now, it would serve as a nice pulse check to make sure that I'm still on the right course or the right path. But it doesn't have the significance that I needed it to have, you know, 3 years ago to pull me out of a really tough spot. So yeah. That's why the book, I mean, you have it. So the only thing I suggest people to read from start to finish is the introduction. After that, I mean, whip out the table of contents and pick the prompt or the person or whatever jumps off of that table of contents that resonates with you, because that's what's relatable right now for you, right? And then that'll lead you down a path of asking other questions and bringing, again, seeking or surfacing more clarity, and that'll lead you to the next one and so forth. And if I've done my job properly, that book will evolve as your life does.
Yeah. I appreciate all of this so much. I love conversations like this because fittingly, you don't give us answers. You basically leave us with a lot of questions. I always jokingly say that I ask questions that actually don't have answers.
Yeah, well, your questions are great.
Thank you. Well, let's wrap things up. I know you got to get going. So I have two final questions for you.
Yeah.
You had this app that reached 86 million people. You've gotten to write a book with a publisher, which I think, you know, for a lot of creative writers is a dream come true. How's your definition of what it means to be successful changed as a byproduct of all this process that you've gone through?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like this is a sign of a good interviewer or a good host because the answer to that question comes full circle on how it started, or our conversation started. And for me, the definition of success for my life is waking up feeling happy and energized and excited to have conversations like these, right? Everything else, they're nice to have. It's nice to have, you know, book selling and nice to have this. But at the end of the day, you could have that and be miserable. And that to me is not the definition of success. So and not to say that every day is a happiness fest. I mean, I'm also human as well, but if I can have more happy days than not and be present, like, I mean, that's my main goal right now, is how can I be present for this call, this interview, the next email, whatever, just actually be present and experience, then I feel like I'm doing the right work. Because if I'm not, then there's something off with, James Clear has a beautiful line in his profile. It says, there's something off with the mountain that I'm climbing. His question is, am I climbing the right mountain? Because we can trick ourselves, right? We can, you know, climbing any mountain feels like work, obviously, and it is work. But if it's the wrong mountain, then it's almost wasted work.
Yeah. Reminds me of David Brooks' book, The Second Mountain.
Yeah.
Well, I have one final question for you, which is how we finish all of our interviews at The Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody hear something unmistakable?
Oh, it makes me think of Coco Chanel, and that's being, you know, what aura or what energy are you leaving behind when you leave a room? Mm. That's the unmistakable, and we're all different. And if we give some thought to what that is, or what we'd like to leave people on the other side. For me, like I said, is energized. I want people to feel motivated and happy and excited. Then, you know, I'll feel good about myself. And if we can think about that and really be true, be honest, are we leaving people like that? Because we're leaving a vibe behind, whether we like it or not. It's just whether, you know, it's the one that we respect or the one that we want to leave behind. So I'd say that'd be the answer, and it suggests people to give it some thought. Give it some thought.
Mm. Amazing. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share your story, your wisdom, and insights with other listeners. I feel like I could just sit here asking you questions all day long. Where could people find out more about you, your work, the book, and everything that you're up to?
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I don't take these conversations lightly. I really appreciate the opportunity to jam, and I feel like I agree. We could speak for hours. Easiest place, one spot, one link, behindthehuman.com. That's my main website. Books there, podcasts there, all the socials. And I, you know, just encourage people to shoot me a message. I'd love to know whether you pick up the book or not. I'd love to know which questions have made the biggest difference in your own life. And as you can probably suspect at this point, I collect these. So share them, tag me, and I'd love to share it with others, because you never know. There's someone on the other side that literally that question could change their life. Yeah. So let's help more people together.
Amazing. And for everybody listening, we'll wrap the show with that.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys, and download your free copy.